same as the taconite pouch. So it's an innovative technology, and they've been responsible for lots of jobs up in northern Minnesota. And with me today is Joe Broeking, the Chief Financial Officer for Magnetation, to answer any questions that you might have on the rulemaking.
Mr. Broeking.
Madam Chair and Committee, thank you. First of all, on behalf of myself and Magnetation, we appreciate the opportunity to speak before you today. As Senator mentioned, my name is Joe Broeking. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for Magnetation. Senator did a very good job of explaining what we do. I think I'll expand on that just a little bit. Magnetation was a company that was founded in 2006 and really began operations in 2008. We have proprietary technology that was developed by our CEO, Mr. Larry Lettinen, and that technology allows us to process fine tailings, fine iron ore tailings from tailings basins or tailings dumps, as they're commonly referred to, and or above ground lean ore or tailing stockpiles. So it's very exciting. We've grown from very humble beginnings to now we employ approximately 220 people. As some of you may have seen, we should be expanding due to various projects to approximately 500 plus employees. You know, the primary reason here today is
also well known that air pollution is, generally speaking, something that has a dose-response relationship, meaning that essentially there are no safe levels. The dirtier the air is, the more people's health will be affected. So as a matter of public policy, it's not a sound idea to roll back any air pollution standards or permitting requirements. So on those grounds alone, I would argue that this is a bad bill. Now, this bill has been described here, and I gather to the other committees it's presented to, as an accommodation for our friends. I would argue that those employers, investors, resource extractors that ought to be welcome in Minnesota are those that wish to comply with our environmental laws, rather than those that wish to evade them or drill loopholes in them. So on those grounds, I would argue to you that this bill is bad public policy and you ought to not to move it forward. But there is another element to this. Although the bill is presented as applying to magnetation, there's nothing in the wording that seeks to limit it in that fashion. In fact, it would have statewide application and could affect the permitting of many facilities. I have been told by the PCA that the agency has not evaluated the implications of this for air permitting statewide. But I want to share with you an implication that's personal to me. I live in a part of the state that is extremely concerned about potential emissions from frac sand mining facilities, which is not news to any of you. But there was a little discussion about what fugitive emissions mean. These mean, as the representative of the PCA said, emissions that blow off piles, emissions that leak out of equipment, emissions that are road dust, emissions that don't come out of a smokestack. And those emissions might be a small part of the picture if we were looking at, say, a coal plant. But when we're looking at facilities that involve materials handling, whether it's mining and processing frac sand or whether it's digging up and reprocessing mining waste piles, it's possible that a very substantial part of the emissions of the facility might in fact be fugitive emissions. So if you take an action that enabled the facility to evade permitting or be held to a lower standard because the emissions were considered to be fugitives, you could in fact be drilling a big hole in whatever protections the host communities now receive from Minnesota's air permitting programs. So this bill on those grounds is very bad public policy, and you ought not to move it forward. Now, I could go on at length, but those are the essential points, and I would be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
It's my understanding that this bill does not affect silica sand mining, and I think that maybe Senator Saxhog could just check that out before it hits the floor so you don't have questions on that on the floor.
I will, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Mueller. Are there any questions for Mr. Mueller? Senator Eaton.
I'd actually like to ask a question of the PCA.
Okay. Would the PCA woman, Ms. Neusler, please come back? Thank you, Mr. Mueller.
What are the implications of this legislation? I mean, I don't know enough about it to even have any idea. I mean, one of these people, is there somewhere in between, or where are we sitting?
Madam Chair, Senator Eaton, again, it's Catherine Neusler, Legislative Coordinator at the PCA. Basically, what this bill impacts is the thresholds of emissions at which we would issue a state permit. The federal rules are very prescriptive, and they describe how you count emissions and when you count fugitive emissions to determine if a facility needs a permit. So we follow those federal rules for our largest facilities. Then there's a category of facilities that are smaller than the ones that trip the federal rules that we permit individually as a state. And what this bill would do is to change our rule that says you shall count fugitive emissions to say you shall not count fugitive emissions if the concern is silica sand, I will say that at this time, under our current rules, we don't permit silica sand facilities because of their fugitive emissions. We permit them where they have a dryer or some kind of equipment that combusts fuel. And so they already don't trip in under our current rules, and so this wouldn't have an effect.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you. There was someone else who raised his hand who wanted to testify. And members, I'm moving us along kind of quickly because a lot of this is not within our jurisdiction. But to see if this is appropriate for changing the rules by statutorily, we do need to have some discussion about it. Okay, please introduce yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Bob Tammen from Sudan, Minnesota, an old mining town. I worked in several of the mines on the range. And first, I'd like to say that I don't really enjoy coming up here to oppose Senator Saxhog's bill because I served on the ground in Vietnam. I'm a Vietnam vet. And when he introduced that bill for a veteran's home, I thought, I'm in my 70s. It's about time. But I also worked in the mines, and I go to funerals. We know that my fellow miners and neighbors that didn't even work in the mines are dying from higher rates of mesothelioma, and plus silicosis, other lung diseases. We have a problem in northern Minnesota. And I realize that the state of Minnesota is doing a study to try to figure out why. And we're getting close to the end of that study. But, you know, I think if we had a definitive answer, it would have leaked out. If we knew why my friends and neighbors were dying, we'd be hearing some reports on that. And, frankly, I don't think we're going to get any report that would inconvenience the mining industry in northern Minnesota. All I know is I'm going to a lot of funerals. And being the agency is neutral on this, I would ask that this committee oppose any legislation that would allow the mining companies to have more liberal standards for secondary emissions and fugitive emissions. Because until we have the science, we shouldn't be weakening the regulations that protect us in northern Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hammond. Any other comments from any members on the committee? Anything from Senator Saxhog?
No, other than to say if somebody would move this, I'd like to pass it on to the floor.
Okay. Are there any motions?
So moved.
Senator Peterson moves that Senate File 1092 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no.
No.
No. No. The motion does not prevail.
Division.
Division. Division has been requested. All those in favor, raise your hand. All those opposed. On a 5-6 vote, the motion does not prevail. Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right.
Thank you.
Senator Herr is here and would like to take up his bill.
You're trapped.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Senator Herr, welcome to the committee.
Senate File 918 required Minneapolis and St. Paul to establish a joint governing structure to coordinate and provide for joint marketing, promotion, and scheduling of events at Target Center and Xcel Energy Center. The governing structure must be established by January 1st of 2015. By February 1st of 2014, the city must study and report to the legislature on creation of the joint governing structure to provide for joint administration, financing, and operation of facility, and the possible effect on finances of each facility and each city. This bill is effective the day following local approval. And with me here today as a testifier is someone whose name is easier to pronounce than mine, is Mr. Bill Huben-Becker.
Huben-Becker. Right.
Yes, and I do have an author amendment passing around and asking
we'll pass out the amendment.
To someone to move it.
Then, since this is an author's amendment, we'll just wait till it gets passed out. Someone like to move it? Senator Wicklund? Senator Wicklund moves the A1 amendment. Make sure, wait, not everyone has it yet.
And passing around to you is maybe you might receive a supporting letter from Senior Vice President of Minnesota Timberwolves.
Okay. Nope. Are we ready now? Okay. Senator Wicklund moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Okay. Senator Herr and you want Mr. Huben-Becker? Okay.
Yes,
Mr. Huben-Becker.
Madam Chairman, members, my name is Bill Huben-Becker. I represent the Xcel Energy Center. And just a brief history and synopsis of how we got here with the bill. Over the last couple of years on sports facilities discussion, we've been talking about the competition between Target Center and the Xcel Energy Center for booking concerts and events. And a brief history on that, concerts 10 years ago used to tour to sell CDs, and that was the purpose. That's where they made their money. Over the last 10 years, that market's changed. They're not making money off selling product anymore, so the focus is on them generating revenue from the concert business. The result of that is the competition, when they come to the market that has multiple arenas, is that they bid the two venues against each other and basically resulting in less revenue for the venues as opposed to a market that has one facility. So as a result of those discussions over the last couple of years and the fact of the antitrust laws prevent the entities that operate these facilities from talking to each other, this bill provides a venue through the government to look at those issues on joint booking. Is there a way to operate the facilities more efficiently, to book them, and so they're more profitable. And so that was kind of in essence the where the legislation come from. And it was again a discussion over the last couple of years on sports facilities up here at the legislature.
Any discussion, Senator Hall?
Sure. Are both the Target and Xcel, are they both interested in this?
Mr. Huben-Becker.
Madam Chairman, Senator Hall, yes, they are. We've the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul have been involved in those discussions, as well as the operators and the venues themselves.
I was kind of surprised myself.
Madam Chair, my name is Gene Ranieri. I'm with the city of Minneapolis, and yes, we do support this legislation.
And the question from Senator Hall, though, was does the Target Center, the sports team you wanted to know, right?
Not the teams, just the centers.
Okay.
Madam Chair, we do own the Target Center, and we do support this, and we do have an operator who is supportive of it also.
Okay. And Madam Chair, is there opposition to this?
Not that I know of. Okay.
Is there any opposition in the room? None in the room, at least. Anyone else want to testify? Someone like to make a motion? Senator Johnson moves that Senate File 918, as amended, be recommended to pass. And it goes straight to the floor. Any other discussion? All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Sir, did you stand
because
you wanted to be recognized? No. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And
thank you very much.
Member of Senate, thank you.
Senator Dahl, is it okay if we take Senator Reinert? You have people waiting, too?
Yeah, be quick.
Senator Reinert, be quick.
We would love to be, Madam Chair.
Senator Reinert is 8.
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, thank you. This is my third today, and each one has taken less than 5 minutes, so I'm going for the trifecta. The committee is... pleasure. Senate File 870 is a housekeeping bill related to the Office of the Legislative Auditor. I'm the chair of the Legislative Audit Commission, And I have with me Jim Nobles, who will talk a little bit about the changes that they're looking for in this bill.
Mr. Nobles.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor, and this is a housekeeping bill. In Section 1, for example, we simply update names of several of the organizations that are subject to audit by the legislative auditor. We then add a provision that allows us to do the audit of the state's financial statements as resources permit. And it also makes clear that audits, and this is current practice and has been for as long as I've been legislative auditor, that our financial audits not only audit the use of public funds, but other resources as well. And then Section 2, again, is not a change. It doesn't expand or add to anything that we already do. It simply gives explicit language that the legislative auditor audits the security of state data and information systems. And I think we're all very aware of the concerns that are surfacing throughout state government about the security of our data and information systems. We've been doing these audits for about 16 years. And again, I wanted this language in our section of law just so when people look at our statute, they're aware that we do these kinds of audits. And then Section 3, Madam Chair, is similar in that there is already existing law and provisions several places in state Minnesota statutes that require public officials to report to the legislative auditor when they obtain evidence of the possible misuse of public funds or other resources. Again, I would like that language in the sections of law related to the Office of the Legislative Auditor, simply so when people look at our section of law, they see that language.
Mr. Nobles, on page 114, what is Clearway, Minnesota?
Madam Chair and members, that is the organization that previously was known as Minnesota Partnership for Action Against Tobacco.
Okay.
So it's simply updating our law to reflect the name change.
All right. Any questions? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Reinhart or Mr. Nobles, on page 2, line 2.17, it says, indicating that public money or other public resources may have been used for an unlawful purpose. Why wouldn't you want must?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, this again reflects language that is elsewhere in state law where a public official gains evidence that looks like somebody may have misused public resources. They're not sure. They may have some evidence or indication. They need to report that to us so that we can have the option of conducting an investigation. It may involve a personnel matter, and they may also need to conduct a personnel investigation. It may also be and often is a criminal issue, and we would coordinate that investigation with law enforcement, and we often do.
So, Madam Chair, this whole bill is redundant.
It's housekeeping.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Nobles.
It is a housekeeping bill, but again, I think it serves a useful purpose in that it allows people to see when they look at the statutes that relate to the Office of the Legislative Auditor that, number one, we do data security audits that we have been doing for the last 16 years, and it tells public officials who look at our statute that they need to report these matters to us. Those reporting provisions, for example, currently are in 43A, which is a law that relates to the state's personnel system, and in the criminal code. So they're not exactly where people would necessarily look for their obligation to report matters to the legislative auditors. So I think simply as a convenience to them, it would be helpful to have that language in our statute. But the other section, Section 1, actually is not redundant. It's simply updating language and, again, giving the legislative auditor some greater flexibility to audit the state's financial statements and schedule that audit as we have resources. As some of you may know, the legislative auditor has a very large area of responsibility to audit. We have responsibility to audit every organization in the executive branch and in the judicial branch. And the list of requirements of what we audit grows. For example, we now audit all the funds that were approved by the legacy amendment. And we also now will have a responsibility to audit the insurance exchange. And with all that added responsibility, we have not asked for any additional staff or money. And so what I have asked for is flexibility to schedule audits as we have resources to do them.
Any other questions? Anyone in the audience want to testify? Then motions? Senator Dahl. Senator Dahl moves that Senate Bill 870 be recommended to pass and
Judiciary.
Sent to Judiciary. Okay.
They've requested it.
How are they ever going to finish? All those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank
Senator
you, Madam
Dahl.
Chair.
Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair and members, I have before you Senate File 971, which is an agency bill, and I actually will go over the brief talking points, and I'll turn it over to Don Kerr or Major Lindsay Olson that will help me with the details here. This particular bill is revisions to the Military Code of Military Justice, and there's eight key parts of this particular bill. Number one, it adjusts court-martial convening authority per model code, adds provisions to clarify appellate process and post-trial procedures. It adjusts warrant powers to align with duty definitions in other statute. It adjusts jurisdiction over certain crimes conducted outside duty status, such as drugs. It adjusts non-judicial punishment rules to align with model code. Streamline summary court-martial procedures to align with model code, adds clarity to limits on punishment by court-martial, and finally removes vagueness from the general article currently subject to attack under a void of vagueness argument. Now, if you want more specifics about those items, I can certainly refer you to our testifiers. This is Don Kerr.
Mr. Kerr, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I am Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. Pleased to appear before you today. A little bit of background. So in 2003, Congress directed the Secretary of Defense to review codes, military codes in the 54 states and territories, and make a recommendation to come up with a model code that could be adopted by all. Military codes throughout the states and territories basically originated around 1921, after World War I, and there was an initial push to be very standard. However, over the last century, things have deviated a little bit, and there are pretty much 54 different solutions right now. The Department of Defense complied with the guidance from the Congress and actually made a recommendation to the American Bar Association, which has approved this model code. And this is a just over a year-long attempt by our staff judge advocate section, of which Major Olson has been kind of the lead lawyer, to revise make recommendations to revise our military code to bring it into alignment with that model code and make it more consistent with the Uniform Code of Military Justice that our service members are subject to when they're serving in federal status. We think that's kind of important because the Uniform Code of Military Justice is a tool to maintain order and discipline that now that our service members have had extensive active duty experience have kind of become accustomed to seeing in their lives and for commanders to use as a disciplinary tool in their unit. So by making our code more consistent with the federal code, we see a great improvement in the potential for good order and discipline in our force. With that, Madam Chair, I'll subject ourselves to questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Kerr? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kerr, this looks like, maybe Ms. Olson can clarify, but this looks like this language is the same as what the Uniform Code of Military Justice is already in statute on the federal level. Or are we more restrictive?
Ms. Olson.
Madam Chair. My name is Major Lindsay Olson. I'm the state judge advocate for the Minnesota National Guard. And this language is very close to the Uniform Code of Military Justice in several ways. But the Uniform Code of Military Justice on the federal side, as federal statute, does not apply to our Minnesota National Guard state forces in a state status. And so this language here replaces and updates the language in our Minnesota statutes that would apply to our forces in a state status.
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Olson, we get 75% of our funding from the federal government. Is that correct?
Major Olson.
Madam Chair, Senator, I'm not sure of the exact percentage that we get. I believe it depends on exactly what type of funding you're talking about. But regardless of the type of funding, for instance, my status right now is called Active Guard Reserve, and I'm in a Title 32 status, which is a federal status that is under state control. And so whenever we're in a Title 32 status or in a purely state active duty status under the control of the governor, we fall under the Minnesota statutes.
Well, Ms. Senator Anderson. Chair, ever since I was in the military, I was always referred to the UCMJ. We always went by that, and it was always federal guidelines that we, even though I was in the Air National Guard, we never went to state guidelines. It was always UCMJ. So I look at this language as being redundant. But
any other questions from members of the committee? Okay, then you're going, Senator Dahl, to Judiciary.
Madam Chair, then I'll move Senate File 971 be approved and sent to Judiciary.
You hear the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
That was too quick for Senator Tomasoni.
He won't push. It's on transportation.
They can't leave.
I don't know what Anderson's going
to
do.
Leave.
I had to make sure.
And Senator Sparks is, too.
Oh, no.
I'm not ready for my bill until 5:15.
Allowed you. I want to make sure I journal.
Senator Eaton, do you want to do your bill then? Your witness is here.
One.
1351. Hennepin County Design Build Contract Provisions. Did you have a question?
Oh, I was just wondering what bill was up next.
She thinks you want them tonight. Oh, no, we're doing them today, right? That's right. I'm on this one with you. Someone was giving me a hard time.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Seems so controversial.
Yeah. I still think it's good.
Okay. Senator Eaton, you have an author's amendment?
I do.
All right.
The A1.
It's in the packet. All right. 1351 A1. Okay. Senator Eaton moves the A1 author's amendment, which is in your packet. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This essentially is a Hennepin County design, built, contract, provisions, update, and technical corrections. And I will let
Deborah Brisk.
Oh, you are? Okay. Deborah Brisk detail what they are. Go ahead.
All right. Ms. Brisk.
Thank you, Senator Eaton. Deborah Brisk, Assistant County Administrator for Public Works for Hennepin County. Senate File Number 1351 updates and makes technical corrections to Hennepin County contract laws. New procedures are provided for design-build contracts. Section 1 amends the definition of design-build contract to specify that the contract may be a single contract that is in phases. Section 2 is added by the A1 amendment. Section 3 clarifies that a design builder must employ or work with a person that is licensed and registered to provide design services. Section 4 reduces the minimum number of firms to be included on the short list of qualified design builders from 3 to 2. And Section 5 limits the role of the county board in evaluating proposals. And Section 6 makes clarifying changes. Section 7 provides for a new design-build contract process. Subdivision 1 provides that the section selection is based on the price divided by the technical score, adjusted for a time factor value. Section 2 provides an alternative process for contracts with an estimated cost of less than $5 million. And Subdivision 3 requires that the county board to award a stipulated fee to be paid to each firm on the short list who provided a responsive but unsuccessful bid. And Subdivision 4 provides that the county may also use low bid design build process. And Subdivision 5 allows the county board to reject all bids. And subdivision 6 provides that if the county provides rejects of all bids or does not execute the contract, the county board may reissue the RFP or request for proposals and allow only shortlisted firms to resubmit the proposals. Subdivision 7 repeals a section on stipulated fees, which is replaced by language in this bill. I need to summarize that this process is basically what Minnesota Department of Transportation utilizes. It's been streamlined in 2010 through some other statutory requirements that have been authorized for MnDOT. What this process does is creates similarity and consistency for the marketplace as far as design build between Minnesota Department of Transportation and Hennepin County. With that, I'm open for questions.
Okay, questions from the committee. Do you have any other testifiers?
Yes, Mr. Tim Workey, the Associated General Contractors.
He's not here, but he was going to testify in support.
It appears that he is not here, but he was going to testify in support of the bill.
Okay. Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair and whoever cares to answer, I looked at Section 4 and reduces a minimum number of firms. Changed it, took out the language at least three. So it leaves it to read, shall adopt a short list of no more than five. So when you say two, that means whenever you go out for bid, you have to have at least two?
Yes. Senator, thank you. Senator Johnson, what this is it's a two-step process. So it's you got the RFQ, qualifications, request for qualifications, and the RFP. So we would shortlist at least two for the proposals, at least two.
Madam Chair, if you don't get two proposals, you go with one.
Ms. Brisk.
Senator Johnson, I would anticipate that would not happen, you'd only get one. I believe history has shown Minnesota Department of Transportation that you always get more than one bid.
Speaker.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On that same question,
members, could you try to? I'm hearing some interference, so we have to be careful with our cell phones, with the microphones. Senator Hall,
What's your reason to change that from three to two?
Ms. Brisk,
excuse me, Senator Hall, could you repeat that question?
In the same section, the same line, what were your reasons from changing that and taking that out to three, which then would make it two?
Ms. Brisk.
Senator Hall, it is correlating directly to what Minnesota Department of Transportation has as their authority, which is two, being shortlisted. So it's consistency.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Johnson.
It doesn't say two. I guess that's maybe what's confusing to me.
Senator, it was amended by the. Was it amended by the?
By the amendment?
I don't know.
I don't know.
No, it wasn't.
I don't think so.
No more than five. Oh, it's okay. On 311,
yes.
On 311, it says two, and on 327, it says no more than five.
Right.
Okay.
So we're back to. Did we get an answer to the question of why you said to be consistent? But it looks like you're changing. I know, but they had design build already in law, so just making it consistent. Mm-hmm.
Sure. With the consistencies with the Department of Transportation.
Okay. All right. I got it.
Council says that's a good reason.
Senator Hall, I guess they already do this, but now they're amending this to be more consistent with MnDOT for whatever reason.
Exactly.
It's a good idea. MnDOT's got a good process. Why do you want to be more consistent with MnDOT? Help us out here.
Yes, Senator. I would look at it this way, that it's been streamlined. It's gone through numerous iterations as the industry has used design build in Minnesota, so it's gone through many projects that have utilized design build. So their process has been vetted and valued within the marketplace, being the contractors and the designers. So from a standpoint for Hennepin County, it's easier for us to use the MnDOT process because, again, it's been utilized numerous times for Minnesota Department of Transportation.
Any other questions? All right, Senator Eaton.
Madam Chair, I would move Senate File 1351 to pass and go to the floor.
Taxes. As amended. Okay. We have...
Why
is she going to taxes?
Madam Chair, I was under the impression this went to the floor. There's no taxes in it.
There's a fee?
There's no taxes.
But it's appealed, right? It's repealed.
It's in here, but it's not a tax.
It's not a tax?
No.
Okay. Okay.
They don't like to hear about the house.
Lexi doesn't think it has to go to taxes.
We don't care what they do.
Right. Okay. As amended to the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Eaton moves that Senate File 1351 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sorry, I didn't leave room for no. Sorry.
Am I doing my other one,
Chair? Unless we have anyone who's not on the committee that's here.
Senator Sparks is here.
Senator Tomasoni. Senator Eaton, could you wait?
You bet.
I think Senator Tomasoni is higher up on the list, and we send for him. 1021.
No, I didn't know these rules. These are good rules.
Does he have any amendments or anything?
Yeah, you want to let him know.
Does he have any authors on it? He does. All right. Senator Tomasoni, did you have an amendment?
Oh, yeah, I think I do.
All right.
But I don't have it with me. Oh, yeah, I do have it with me. Is it an A4?
A8? It's a new section one. Oh, good. Did you rewrite this? All right, good.
Well, I hope.
Senator Tomasoni's author's amendment. Would somebody like to offer that? Senator Anderson moves the A8 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill, Senate File 1021, has to do with the trails and legacy amendment. As you all know, the legacy amendment has opened up a lot of doors for citizens of our state, and the Park and Trails Fund is giving Greater Minnesota a chance to develop some of our most beautiful, abundant, and raw natural resources into destination locations where people from the cities or the region or around the world can come to enjoy. Examples of the kind of places we are planning to develop include the Duluth Lake Walk, Quarry Park in St. Cloud, or the Cuyuna Mountain Bike Trail, or the Mesabi Trail. And that is attracting a worldwide following and changing the culture of small towns in north central Minnesota, such as Crosby. I know the park and trail funding has been a contentious issue, and Greater Minnesota has been criticized for not having a plan and not having a structure for distributing legacy funding. Members should know that we are creating an excellent plan based on regional insights and defined criteria and protocol. And the commission created in this bill becomes the structure for administering that plan. I have Mark Matisse with me here to testify. And I also want people to know that we are working on this bill in such a way that it is a peace in the valley type bill, and hopefully everybody can agree to what we're trying to do here so that the commission that is set up here can get on with its work and start making the plan that we've been talking about for rural Minnesota. So, all right, Mark, would you like to go ahead and say something?
Do you introduce yourself for the tape?
Yes. Good evening, Madam Chair. I'm Mark Matisse. I'm with the Greater Minnesota Regional Park.
Could you say your last name again?
Matisse.
Matisse?
Yeah. All right,
thank you.
M-A-T-T-I-C-E. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails and the establishment of the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission. The establishment of this commission would be extremely important to move the regional park and trail planning system forward with solid direction, planning, and foresight. During the last legislative session, funding was dedicated to develop a strategic plan that would guide Greater Minnesota well into the future. This plan received great input from the Minnesota DNR, the metro area, and all the regions in Greater Minnesota. The plan identified the vetting process, regional priorities, criteria to establish future and existing facilities of regional significance in Greater Minnesota. The Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Strategic Plan incorporates the pillars of the 25-year Parks and Trails Legacy Plan that was adopted by the legislature. This commission plans to follow those objectives within those two plans and will allow Greater Minnesota to be an impact player in the creation of the statewide regional park and trail system. We have heard there are concerns about how Greater Minnesota will evaluate what is and what is not a regional park. Our strategic plan clearly identifies and states how the vetting process will work, what criteria will be for regional facilities such as a regional trail, a natural resource regional park, and a special feature regional park. These areas will provide high-quality experiences and will fill the gap within the region. By placing definitions that are established in the metro area, it does not really work in Greater Minnesota. The makeup of Greater Minnesota is much different. But by following the criteria set forth in our strategic plan, by the 25-year Parks and Legacy Plan, we feel we'll meet those goals that are necessary in Greater Minnesota. And so I would appreciate you as a committee moving the commission bill forward based on the processes that have been established over the last few years and within our strategic plan and as a vision within the 25-year Parks and Trail Legacy System.
Ms. James, does the A8 amendment then comply with our guidelines?
Madam Chair and members, yes. The A8 brings the commission into the compliance with the guidelines.
Good work, Senator Thomason.
Oh. She deserves a credit, actually.
I know. Is there any, are there any questions from members of the committee?
Yes.
Senator Scalzi.
I have the A5 amendment that I'd like to have passed out. You can talk.
Well, that's being passed out, Senator Johnson.
Yes, and that was, it was to the amendment. So basically there is no significant or change in the reason for the legislation with the amendment that we adopted.
Senator Papp.
Senator Thompson.
Senator Johnson, I'm not sure what you mean. If you mean is this A8 amendment different than what the bill was passed out of the committee the other day, I think it's technical mostly in nature, correct?
That's what I thought I heard.
Madam Chair and members,
Ms.
yes.
James.
Madam Chair and members, yes, it does a few things that are all to help it comply with the guidelines. There are things that weren't in there before, but they are all intended to meet the guidelines.
Thank you.
Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And I did present this amendment for discussion only in the Environment and Energy Commission. So this is the same amendment, Senator Thomasoni. What this amendment would do would bring the outstate regional parks and trails into the same set of standards as the metro has to meet. We have to meet specific standards, and this A5 amendment is what's in state law for the metro regional parks and trails. We have to meet this. It has to be a park and trail of regional or state wide significance. Now, what I did with this amendment, since I brought it up in Environment and Energy, there was some question about, and the reason I brought it up was for discussion, there was some question about the amount of visitors that you could get per year in an outstate park, and we had 10,000 in the metro. We have to meet a 10,000 threshold. So there was some discussion that perhaps that's too high a bar for outstate regional parks and trails. So I left that blank, and I think that maybe Senator Thomasoni could give us a figure for that. It just seems, though, that as the bill is amended, is vague. It's kind of a circular definition. It's defined by relating it back to a plan to be adopted by the commission to be established. And it also is tied to another plan that, while published, that plan has not been adopted by the legislature. So it's a plan that is not in state law with a adopted standard by the legislature. I just think that we should, if the Metro Regional Parks has to follow this kind of a rule, and this is state taxpayer money we're spending here, I just think that it would be in your best interest and ours as well if the standards were similar.
And Madam Chair and Senator Scalzi, I think we're working toward it. I'm trying to figure this out with you at the same time. I like the blank in front of the visitors, and I'm wondering if we can put a blank in front of the percent until we can work something out. Because I think this is a work in progress, and I think we're getting to where we want to all be. I'm not adverse to having some kind of requirements in the law for the regional statewide parks either. But I think because of the fact that we are significantly different in rural Minnesota in regards to population, in regards to distance traveled, in regards to the number of visitors, that I think before we put something in law, we should sit down and talk about it and figure out exactly what would be the correct number. I think this could be worked on more and come to some kind of a conclusion that we can all agree with. But I don't know, maybe Mr. Larson can say what he thinks.
Madam Chair, Senator Scalzi, we do appreciate this effort. And I appreciate what Senator Tomasoni has expressed. We'd like a little time to work with this. We're not opposed to putting standards into the bill. We just need a little time to figure out what works for us. I mean, for instance, on number four with the parks, I think that language looks fine. But I know that we've got some concerns on number five. I just don't know quite what they are yet. I haven't had a chance to get back to people that my leadership, and especially on the visitation numbers. So if we could, I'd like to have a little time to work on this. This isn't the last stop that this bill is going to make. It does have to go to Senator Tomasoni's committee, and it will end up in legacy, I'm sure. So that would be the request.
Senator Scalzi.
Ms. Chair, and I'm trying to avoid a floor fight is what I'm trying to do. This bill, this amendment was passed in the House, in the Environment and also the Finance Committee. And so it's going to your Finance Committee. I would if that would make it easier for you to leave the zero for before the percent, that would be amenable to me. I would like the amendment to go on with the two blanks, and we can fill them in at your committee. But the amendment has the structure that we think is fair between Metro and outstate regional parks and trails.
And Madam Chairman,
Senator
Scalzi, I think Mr. Larson expressed some concern about number five, and if that would be one that I would, since we don't know exactly what the impact would be, we might want to delete that as well right now, and then we can work on this afterwards, because I think this is a good format for it.
Madam Chair, if I may,
Senator Torres Ray.
Madam Chair, this amendment is very important, and number five should not be deleted. I have to tell you, Senator Scalzi, I'm so glad that you brought this up. I work on this for 3 years, and I have these books that were put together. We pay $500,000 to the University of Minnesota to put these books together in 2008. But these books, this is one of four. I would love to have the university present this. What we charged the university with was a task to tell us how parks and trails need to connect. It was when we received the legacy money, what we discovered is that we have many parks that have trails that connect to nowhere, and that we have parks that are not connected with one another, and that we have a system that we need to take care of. It is true that we need to do a lot of work in rural Minnesota in order to really bring these maps and this work together to figure out what needs to happen next. But what is problematic about the legislation that is before us is that it disconnects rural Minnesota from the rest of the system, as the language proposes. And that's, you know, the language that you have, Senator, in here creates a model that basically prescribes a coalition that shall establish six regional parks and trails outside of the seven metropolitan area, which actually is in conflict with what the University of Minnesota actually created for us, which was that we really need, through this inventory, begin to look at how parks and trails actually connect and how we maintain and expand those trails and the connection between parks. Minnesota, according to the University of Minnesota, needs to do a better job of connecting existing parks and trails in order to really be able to bring tourism and a holistic experience for people who visit our parks and trails and our lakes. And it is absolutely imperative that we connect. So I do support the idea of creating a better system to connect rural Minnesota and to figure out what is needed in rural Minnesota to connect parks and trails, but not connecting the work that we need to do in this coalition with the existing system is really a disservice to the entire parks and trails system. And I really would like to encourage you to read this, because this was so expensive and so important for the state of Minnesota. I mean, it really is.
Mr. Larson.
Madam Chair and members, I don't want to leave this committee with the impression that the plan that we built is going to, in greater Minnesota, is going to be in any way disconnected from the metro. Our plan is to be interconnected. We want a plan where in greater Minnesota, these trails and parks are economic development. We want to bring people from the metro area out to these great undeveloped natural resources that the Legacy Fund, in the wisdom of the citizens of the state, provided for us in 2008. So this is something that we want to do well, and the input is very well taken. We're in these same discussions in the other body, but we are not opposed in any way to amending and putting these standards into the bill. Want to do it, but want to do it right. And on the connectivity, we do plan on being an interconnected system. For a reason I can't explain right now, our leadership had a concern with that one, and I just wish I had a little time to work on it.
Mr. Matisse, to the amendment.
Maybe to her comment.
Madam Chair,
just
more
to
towards
comment.
Senator.
All right, Mr. Matisse.
During our planning process with the strategic plan, the youth study was very vital to that planning. We looked at it, we incorporated it, and we've expanded on it. We've taken their inventory and put it in a web-based system that can be managed, so we can see statewide, we can see concept plans, we can see master plans, how they relate to each other, how these parks can develop, how these trails can connect. That wasn't money wasted, because it is being used in our plan. So hats off to you for having done that the first time around. And that is the basis for this plan, was the youth study. We made the plan more dynamic, more functional to work with. And within the bill, we're not establishing six regional parks. In Minnesota, in greater Minnesota, we feel there are regions, and each region has different priorities. You get in northeastern Minnesota where they're land rich. You get in southwestern Minnesota where they're land poor. Their acquisition for regional parks and trails are much different in those regions. So defining those priorities within those regions is important. And having a well-thought-out process on how those projects in those regions move to the top so we can best expend our funds for legacy for all Minnesotans is the key. It is a statewide planning, and 80 counties is hard to manage, so that's why that division is there, but yet it's all one. And to get those priorities, to get that connectivity amongst regions and those priorities established is why that division's there, so it's more manageable and more visual as we spread. I don't know if that helps anything or not. But.
Senator Scalzi.
To be a trail of regional or statewide significance, you'd almost have to connect to a regional trail. I think the big difference here is that the Constitution is very clear on this. This is parks and trails money that we're collecting from everyone all over the state, metro and outstate. And it's very clear that this 14.25% may be spent only to support parks and trails of regional or statewide significance. And that's why for the metro regional parks and trails, it's very clear that everything has to be of regional or statewide significance. And I always use my own district as an example. I represent like 9 cities. I only have 1 regional park and trail out of all those cities. There's many parks and trails, but there's only one that has met the guidelines. And it's very difficult to meet guidelines. But when we're using taxpayer dollars that are specifically designated as stated in the Constitution, we've got to be very careful and we have to be very structured. And that's why I think if you want to leave the number of visitors until we get to Senator Tomasoni's committee, or leave the percentage of park and trail users from a different area, which we have to meet in the metro area, then I'd say leave those 2. I wouldn't want to strike 5 because a trail would not be regional unless it was connected to some sort of regional or statewide significant trail.
Senator Scalzi, Senate Council needs to correct some subdivisions. So on page of the amendment, 1.2, strike 4 and insert 6. And on line 1.3, strike 4 and insert 6. And then Senator Scalzi has incorporated into her amendment on 1.6, delete 30 and leave that blank. Is there any more discussion on the A5 amendment? Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to thank Senator Scalzi for her amendment. I guess before I can really know how to vote on the bill, I if possible, I'd like to find a number that we could put in there. I think the number is very relevant. And I think that this is something that needs to be addressed, and this is the state government committee. I think it's reasonable to address it here, so I would certainly be open to – I don't know that I have the magic number, but I think it should be significant, and I'd be interested to hear members' perspective on it. But I don't know how I vote a bill out of committee on a critical issue like that left open.
Senator Thompson, are you concerned about the number on 1.6 or the number on 1.9 or both of them?
Got to get my line straight here.
On the amendment.
1.9 primarily, 1.9. But both of them.
Structure, the detail, the numbers of detail.
Mr. Matisse.
Madam Chair, Senator Scalzi, I'd like to make comment. I appreciate that, and I 100% agree that this money needs to be spent wisely for all of Minnesotans. The one difference I believe I see for 1.14 is that the trail connects to an existing state or region or trail. As you mentioned, in your city, there is a regional trail, and you can make those connections and expand that regional trail. There's a lot of areas in greater Minnesota that may not have a regional trail at all. You're looking at miles and miles of county land or state trail. So then to put in a grant application or a project, have a standalone regional trail that might connect to a regional destination. For example, the Lake Wobegon Trail at one time stood alone, and then the Central Lakes Trail came in, and that was actually a state trail that connected to a regional trail. So that's where kind of confuses me. It has to connect to an existing regional trail. Some of these trails might be the only amenity in that area once they're established. So if we could look at amending it to enhances connectivity to regional destinations, might be a thing, because you might have a trail. I'm not real good with northern Minnesota. I'm kind of a southern boy. So the city of Fairfax out to Fort Ripley.
I guess my recommendation would be that since this is a work in progress, obviously there may be blanks left in it if it can pass out without Senator Thompson's vote. I think if you still need to do some research on this, and it does say or will connect, so it doesn't say will connect within 10 years or 20 years. It's just that the idea is that these regional parks of significance should have interconnections to trails.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, if that's the plan of the state plan, then, I think there's enough wiggle room in there.
Madam Chair, I think you make a good point, Madam Chair.
Let's just keep working on it. But the sense of our committee is we want these to be interconnected.
Yes. Yep. And so do we.
And so do we.
All right. Great. So I'm Representative Senator Scalzi.
So, Ms. Chair, for Senator Thompson's question regarding the number of visitors, In the metro, we put in 10,000, and we understand from the last committee we were at, that's not reasonable for outstate Minnesota. 10,000, I mean, we'd get that one day at Como Zoo. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 10,000, you know, maybe we should be talking about 2,000 a year or 5,000, because we want to make sure that you have, it's going to be to your benefit when you get all these little towns coming to you and saying, I want this in my district, and you're going to have to say, you're not regional or statewide because of this. Mm-hmm. And it's actually, I think, going to help you, because this helps us. This prevents me from going to the metro parks and saying, hey, I've got a park I'd like developed and a trail that connects. And they say, Senator Scalzi, you don't meet the guidelines. So I go home.
And Madam Chair, Senator Scalzi, I'm working with you here. So
right. But we only got one committee, and it's yours.
Yes, well, we'll get it done. Don't worry. I, you know, Madam Chair, to Senator Thompson's point, yesterday was the first time we heard the bill, and when Senator Scalzi's other amendment came up yesterday for the first time. And so I think the reason this is a work in progress is because this is the first time we're considering this type of stuff. And I think everybody agrees that we can do something here. It's just a matter of getting the numbers right.
So Madam Chair, then would it be appropriate to pass the amendment out of this committee with the structure in the amendment and those two blanks, and those blanks will be filled in before your committee or before the floor? Because
yes,
we'll be looking at those two blanks on the floor.
That's the intention. That would be my intention.
We'll be looking at the numbers in those two blanks mm-hmm. on the floor.
Right.
And I guess I would be amenable to that, to pass this structure and fill in the numbers in your committee, and we'll look on that on the floor.
Any other discussion, questions? Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, I assume this will be part of an omnibus bill?
Senator Thomasoni.
It's going to be probably part of legacy. Or it might go out on its own.
Madam Chair, my point is
Thompson.
Dealing with it on the floor becomes a sticky issue because all of a sudden it's lumped in with a number of other different things.
Madam Chair.
But I've made my point. I'll register right. my concern, and that's
Senator Thomasoni.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Thompson, I think we're going to agree on the numbers before we pass it out. Okay.
Any other discussion, questions? Anyone else want to testify? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Torres-Ray, you mentioned the study that the University of Minnesota has brought forward. Is there a name given to that? Because I see mentioned in this bill or this amendment, A8, the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Coalition, and they reference it as a strategic plan. I'm wondering what the name of your bill, or what the name of your plan is that you're talking about there.
That's different. That's the inventory.
Madam Chair, Senator, the title of this book is Minnesota's Networks of Parks and Trails, County and Maps Tables. And basically what we did was to commission the university to do an inventory and to give us some sense of what we have. Because what we learned when we engaged in this discussion was that we really didn't know a lot about our parks and trails. We knew about the main parks and trails, but we didn't have a good map, a detailed map of what's out there and what was the actual condition status of trails and parks throughout the state of Minnesota and what we needed to do in order to take care of parks and trails. And so this is what these books actually are. They are maps of all the trails and parks and lakes that exist in the state of Minnesota. So now we have an inventory. And what they said was that it was imperative for the state of Minnesota to continue to work on regional connectivity. Because if we didn't, our park system was becoming really, really much more debilitated because we were not investing enough in maintaining the existing infrastructure. And we had a lot of parks out there and a lot of trails that were in place but connected to nothing. They were not connected to lakes or between parks. So it is absolutely essential, Senator, that we continue to work on this in all regions, that we connect the state of Minnesota because the future of parks and trails actually depends on it. The entire state. The future of our state depends on our ability to keep this. So that's why I think Senator Scalzi's amendment is just so important, because it brings that the recommendation that came from experts who did a lot of work to put these maps together to kind of guide us in that direction of maintaining that connectivity.
Oh, Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Senator Torres-Ray, I'm just wondering if the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails adopted parts of that or made that part of their overall strategic plan because it's referenced there.
I don't know if they exist. Do they exist?
They don't exist.
Mr. Matisse?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson. Well, the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Coalition actually exists. The commission does not. The coalition is just a bunch of park and recreation professionals in Greater Minnesota trying to better regional parks and trails in Greater Minnesota. The plan from the U is part of the strategic plan. It was incorporated in. In the plan from the U, they identified a possibility of 130 regional parks in Greater Minnesota. Through our strategic plan that's going to guide the commission, there was a vetting process done on all 130 parks, similar to the criteria that's in our strategic plan, which is similar to this, maybe not with the 30%, because user data, user counts are somewhat obscure in Greater Minnesota. Through that vetting process, it wasn't people like me that did that. It was we had the local grants unit from the DNR. We had Greg Ingram, Hosington Koiliger, very well-respected park planner, Schoenbauer's Consulting. We had a panel that evaluated it. They narrowed that down to about 47 parks that actually meet criteria of what a regional park and trail should be. So the inventory that the U did was a great starting point for us to start narrowing down what should be a regional park in Greater Minnesota based on the criteria of that regional, that strategic plan.
And the connector applies
so,
to
Mr.
everything.
Chair.
Senator Scalzi.
Yep. And I don't know if I move the A5 amendment, but before I do, I'd like to delete the 30 and leave it a blank for now.
Okay.
And we may come up with something like 15 or whatever. We want to make it regional so it's not just local. And then I misstated before, and I'd like to leave the blank for the number of visitors. In the metro area, we have to come up with 20,000 visitors.
20.
I said 10. It's 10 as in Como in one day, but
right.
20,000.
In a year.
In a year.
Yeah.
So I would like to leave that blank, and then I'll work with Senator Tomasoni between now and when it comes to his committee. So with that correction of the deleting the 30 and leaving it blank right now, then I would move the A5 amendment.
And the subdivision corrections I made previously.
Exactly.
Okay, all those in favor of the A.
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, Senator Hall.
That's all right. I just like to say I feel really uncomfortable, like Senator Thompson, without putting percentages in there. I have a hard time moving this forward without numbers, giving some idea what this committee, I know other committees will hear it and be able to make that decision, but I personally think it's our decision to make. And so I will be voting no on this unless there's numbers in there.
Senator Hall, it's with all due respect, this thing about parks and trails is not really within our jurisdiction. The composition of the commission is what's in our jurisdiction. So that's covered in the Environment Committee or the Legacy Subcommittee.
Madam Chair, then is it it's okay to amend it?
Anybody
those
can
areas?
Offer an amendment.
Even if it's not within the area.
Even if it's not within jurisdiction. So that's why we've been discussing it, but I did want to just say that it's not technically in our jurisdiction.
And I assume it's in the next committee's jurisdiction. Mm-hmm.
The committee is going to. Senator Scalzi renews her motion on the A5 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay.
No.
Motion prevails. I had a quick question for Mr. Matisse is how did you come up with the number 6 regional parks?
It's not regional parks.
That's in both the
districts.
The original bill.
Chair.
On line 1.18 shall establish 6 regional parks.
Madam Chair, those are 18. Anyhow, those are 6 regional districts that we are establishing. Those are based off of the AMC districts.
What are the AMC districts?
Association of Minnesota Counties.
Yeah.
And then that provides a region. It's regional park and trail districts. It's not
regional,
parks.
It's not regional parks.
Not regional parks, it's districts. Kind of like the Met Council is a district. We'd have regions, so we'd have northwest, northeast, south. Districts is the key word there. It's not parks or trails. It's to help plan the connectivity overall within those regions or districts. I probably used the wrong word when I testified. I said regions. It's actually districts. And that gives us two appointees from each district, which gives us 12, then an at-large member for 13 for the board to be created.
Madam Chair, we...
Mr. Larson.
It's an arbitrary number, but we looked at the state, and we wanted to recognize the unique geographic benefits in each of the regions, and we picked six. If there's a better number, we'll listen.
Okay. So it's not saying we're establishing parks. We're establishing districts.
Districts, correct.
And then the whole issue of the park has to meet the criteria. Right.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And then think of it as within the district, you'll meet and you'll based on criteria, you all put your plans together and you bring them forward. Think of, for those of you that have worked on transportation issues, the ATP process where state funds are run through local ATPs and the best projects come to the top.
Okay, Ms. James had another cross-reference.
Madam Chair and members, on line 1.11 of the A8, delete 3 and insert 5. And I believe also on line 2.19, delete 3 and insert 5.
Okay, you heard the motion. Well, somebody has to make the motion.
I'll move the bill.
Senator Scalzi moves the technical change previously expressed by council. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Motion prevails. Sorry, I didn't give you a chance.
Madam Chair, I have a couple
Senator
of questions.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair,
an amendment to A8.
Since this the jurisdiction under this committee are to really determine the need for, a commission and then how that actually is connected to the work that a state agency is doing, I would like to hear from DNR. There are a couple of issues that concern me about this. One is... there is a duty added here about recommendation for grants that the commissioner shall consider. So there is in line 216, there is a change. So we have a commission that actually makes a recommendation that says the commissioner shall consider, and then it says the commission may hire a director, consultants in 220, subdivision 8, and staff necessary to carry out the duties of the commission. So, this committee is responsible for figuring out, kind of how that works with state agencies. So is DNR going to work? Is the commissioner of natural resources going to work in close contact with the new director or consultants, and is the budget for this commission coming out of the specific funding that was allocated for parks and trails? So I'm kind of curious about how the mechanics work. Where does the funding come from? The staff, for the staff, which is the new director and consultants of this new commission, and how the actual decision on funding and distribution of funding is actually coordinated with the Department of Natural Resources, which is the entity that is currently responsible for that. So I'm kind of curious about how those mechanics actually work.
Is there anyone here from the Department of Natural Resources? Okay, could you come up to the table?
Mark,
and
let me stay.
Mr. Matisse is going to give you. Please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Luke Skinner. I am a deputy director for the Division of Parks and Trails in the DNR. And I apologize, I have not seen the amendment, so I'd have to look at it real quickly to see where the
Actually, this is part of the legislation. This is the
20. You said it's buying 2 point.
It's the same.
So there are several. There are several issues here. One is that, you know, we create a new commission, and the commission in lines 212 actually determine the recommended grant amounts, so they have the actual responsibility for distribution of grants. In 218, they said this says grants may be recommended for whatever, and then the commission may hire a director, so that's subdivision 8, and consultants. So there is a responsibility for review, I suppose, of and determination of this. I mean, they have to review the grants, and they have to determine eligibility, and they have to provide. So all of these responsibilities are now the current responsibilities of the Department of Natural Resources. This bill will transfer those responsibilities for rural Minnesota to this commission. So I'm curious how this will work.
And does the commission recommend to the DNR or recommend to the legislature?
Right. I don't know.
Yeah.
And Ms. Chair, and before they answer that, the Metro Regional Parks and Trails, we do not have the ability to hire a director under current law. So we don't hire a director. We take it out of our parks and our Metro Parks and Trails money, which we pay for by property taxes through the Met Council. So this is very different from what we're allowed to do. We're not allowed to hire a director.
Mr. Skinner, with state money.
Madam Chair, committee members, yes, this does transfer that responsibility to the new commission. The DNR does now administer all those grants, and if this happened, if this change occurred, we would work with the new commission to help transfer that in a seamless way. Part of it is right now some of the grants that we have actually go out to 2006 with the three-year legacy funding period. So we continue to do that. You know, we certainly think it's if the commission takes this over that we can help make that transition for them to do that. The DNR, the only recommendation within here that actually impacts the DNR besides that is that the DNR would help consultation with the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks Coalition establish these six districts so it makes sense within the state. But so from that standpoint, you know, we're certainly willing to work with the commission and make sure it's seamless and that it works well if there's a transition.
Follow up,
Senator Horsley.
So, Senator, the commission, where would the commission get the funding to do all of the work that DNR currently does? Would that be from the Parks and Trails Fund, or are the six regions, because the actual funding does not prescribe for the regions actually, which is what we do in the metro area that we fund it. Would the regions be responsible for funding their own staff?
Mr. Skinner.
Madam Chair, right now in the governor's budget, and the governor's recommendation is to take 0.5% off the top of the legacy fund to help build the Greater Minnesota Commission Coalition and build that function. And half of that would go directly to this building of the infrastructure for the Greater Minnesota Commission, and also work. And the other half is to build, so they're working closely with the Met Council, with the DNR, and the Greater Minnesota Coalition as a working group to help continue on this process. So we have this connectivity across the state.
Madam Chair, follow up.
Senator Horsley.
Could you tell us how much money are we talking about when you say 1%? I just haven't reviewed that item. I just reviewed the education budget. So I don't have a clue.
Mr. Skinner.
Madam Chair, it's $407,000. And that is for the biennium. So it would be $200,000 annually.
Thank you.
And, Ms. Chair, I have a...
And currently in your budget, you're doing this work. How many FTEs do you have devoted to this work in the DNR budget? I mean, or it comes out of legacy as well, the administrative costs.
Madam Chair, that is correct. We use some of the legacy funds directly that we get for this purpose to administer that. We have, I can't say exactly, but we do have like two full-time grants persons right on board right now that work just to manage the legacy funds, plus others that help support.
Okay. Senator Scalzi.
Ms. Chair, and members, it would be unusual, I think, now to create a commission if the DNR has been working with that process, because when, I mean, like I say, we don't do that. We have to pay for it with property taxes. We're, by state law, we can only do what's in that law.
You can't use any legacy money for administrative costs.
Exactly, exactly. It's for projects. It's very clear only to support parks and trails of regional or statewide significance. And I'm assuming that the DNR should still be the one that's handling the appropriations rather than creating another level of government to appropriate the legacy funds that we all pay.
Mr. Larson?
Madam Chair, I'll take a run at this. My understanding of the application of the park and trail funds is pretty broad, fairly broad. I've had conversations with natural resource staff on this, and this is just my recollection. But if the funding would apply, if it works towards the administration of the goals of parks and trails. So I'm hacking this up a little bit, but that's my understanding. If the funding would further the administration of parks and trails, essentially it would be acceptable.
Any other comments? Discussion? Senator Scalzi.
I'm wondering if we can get an opinion from council if that fits under the Constitution, that they would pay for this.
We were talking to each other, so you might have to repeat it.
My question is, does it fit under the constitutional language that we would be using this tax money that we all pay, the sales tax money, to fund a new commission?
Madam Chair, Senator Scalzi, and members,
Ms. James,
that is something that I do not have any expertise in at all. I would need to look into it and get some help from Council for the Environment Committee. Here
she's talking about Madam Chair,
Senator Horsray.
Another issue, you know, I want to make absolutely clear that I support the effort to build, to support the work that Greater Minnesota has been doing to really identify the needs, put plans together, and submit recommendations. And, in fact, I would be more than happy, Senator Tomassoni, to support you on that effort and support you on pursuing funding for that effort. Absolutely. It needs to happen. It is clear that when we did this, we noticed that there was not an entity in Greater Minnesota who could do that work on behalf of those regions. The bill, however, creates an entity that goes really far into taking on some of the duties of the Department of Natural Resources for distribution of funding and steps into kind of a duty that I think it should be statewide. And that's my problem with that. And the second thing is that we don't say in the legislation how there is no provision in this bill that actually says how that's paid. So we don't. We don't know. What you just explained about the 1% actually is not here. It's not in legislation. It doesn't say that it's the governor's recommendation for the 1%. That's not in your bill. So I will be more than happy to work with you, but I don't, because I do want to support the work that needs to happen in Greater Minnesota to do a better job of assessing, you know, what's going on with parks and trails and why we need to invest more. I do believe that we need to invest more. I do believe that we have some problems because there are parks and trails that are not of regional significance that we need to invest in, and perhaps we need to review that. But the creation of this particular entity and the adoption of all of these duties and taking that away from a state agency that looks at the system in a more holistic way, I believe could be very problematic for the future of parks and trails in Minnesota.
Well, members, our jurisdiction is basically the A8 amendment. So if we feel comfortable in approving the A8 amendment, which is now in the bill, even if we're not totally comfortable with the bill, it would be appropriate for us to send it out. Okay, Senator Scalzi.
Ms. Chair, in answer to Senator Torres-Ray's question, are you proposing then to delete subdivision 8 on line 2.20?
On the amendment?
On the amendment, we're dealing with the A8 amendment.
Okay. 2.20.
Yeah, Madam Chair. I think that my hesitation is the commission and the duties, because I do think that it takes away that vision of the statewide vision for parks and trails and connectivity. And I struggle with this because I do think that there is a need for an entity that speaks for parks in greater Minnesota. I am uncomfortable with the amendment.
Madam Chair?
So your ideas that, I mean, we're sharing ideas with Senator Tomasoni in some ways, are that you support the idea of a commission that would recommend projects, but think that the DNR should actually still be the administrator of the grants.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Mr. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, the vision of Greater Minnesota is to become the third leg of the park and trail stool, if you will. You've got Metro Parks, you have DNR, and what we're working to create here is an entity for Greater Minnesota that can stand alone. We want the DNR's involvement, we want their input, but we want to be our own separate entity and feel we should be able to control our own interests in Greater Minnesota. The projects that we in the planning and the process that we are establishing here, and we're taking great pains to do it, is going to be very organic. It's going to come up from local units of government, and they're going to and their processes are going to be fully vetted based on criteria and protocols that are established in the plan. The commission is going to be established to administer that. We appreciate the DNR's input, but we don't want to be tied to the DNR. They've got their own system, and we would look at this as a system of our own.
Senator Hayden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have been listening patiently, just trying to follow this issue. I hadn't followed it that much until this point. I appreciate the work that Senator Torres-Reyes has done in terms of kind of the interconnectivity of the state, and I appreciate the very thoughtful comments that you've had. I think that Senator Scalzi's amendment is appropriate, but I also want to respect the author and his ability to bring this forward and this idea forward, and what I think is a very genuine opportunity for him, or a genuine statement of him, to say that he wants peace in the valley. He's going to continue to work in it. It's going to go to his his committee, also yet to the floor. So I think that I would like to extend him the courtesy of seeing if we can offer the amendment that Senator...
It's adopted.
Oh, well, then to continue with that, but to not do too much to his bill at this point, and still allow him and all the folks that are involved in this to kind of work this out and make sure that it works for them. So as much as I'd love to support my fellow Senator Torres-Reyes, I just don't think it would be appropriate right now to delete that section out of his bill.
Then do you want to move the bill? Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to express my concern that the metro area has to do property taxes to fund their organization to manage the parks. I'm really uncomfortable with using the legacy money to develop this commission. That's the part that really is not okay with me.
Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, I'll make the motion to remove the lines 220 and 221. And Senator Tomasoni, when you go to your committee, you can put it back in if you need to and think it's right. I don't know what you know that I don't know, that the DNR is not a satisfactory unit of government to take care of this issue. So, you know, possibly we should have our own administration here also in the metro area. I don't know, but I think, anyway, that's my motion.
We do, but we don't use legacy money.
Remove lines 220 and 221.
Senator Eaton.
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, we do have our own organization here in the Metro, and we fund it through property taxes. We do not use legacy money to fund it. And so that's what I'm talking about, is that why are we using legacy money in northern Minnesota to fund this commission?
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that, Senator Eaton. I would still move my amendment.
Okay. Senator Johnson moves to delete on page 2 of the amendment to delete subdivision 8, lines 20 and 21. Any discussion? And Senator Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, I'm just curious if the Met Council uses any of the grant money to manage any of the grants that they give out, and I'd be willing to bet they do. But, I don't mind you taking that out, but the fact of the matter is that this has been a work in progress, and Senator Hayden put it very well. We came here with people agreeing to do this and on both sides, and I'm fine if the committee decides to take those two lines out, and we will have to then figure out exactly if we need them back in or not, and continue to move forward and with the other recommendations of this. But I just want to point out to this committee that bringing this bill in front of this committee and in front of the Senator Marty's committee the other day, we were doing this the best attempt to agree to have peace in the valley and make sure everybody understood what was going on.
Members, I'm just wondering, I mean, the commission, obviously, if they're going to function, they need to hire a director. But it sounds to me the concern from members is that they don't want them to use legacy money to pay for administration. So maybe that's a more appropriate motion.
Madam Chair.
Senator Johnson.
I don't know, a comment from Senator Tomasoni maybe, but, I'm serious when I say, you can put it back in when you go to your committee,
Is that easy?
You choose to do about administering that commission. But if you would say that the legacy money may not be used for these provisions, that would probably take care of it.
We keep the appropriation section in.
So whatever you choose, Senator Tomasoni.
Ms. Chair.
Senator Scalzi.
We have a testifier here that could explain. Senator Tomasoni mentioned that he doesn't know how Met Council does this, so I think we should hear from this testifier.
Mr. Rice, can you?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Brian Rice. I'm the attorney for the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board and familiar with these legacy dollars. With respect to the question of how projects are granted to the Met Council, they are project-specific programs that are presented to the Met Council, and grants are given to build a project. When it comes to administering plans and other functions, Senator Scalzi is correct. Those are subsumed within the operating budgets of the agencies through property taxes to prepare them. But once a project is undertaken, there may be some allocation of staff resources to that project. But as far as the planning, the overall planning and the administration, those are done through largely property taxes to run our system or fees, other things that are collected locally.
But specifically to legacy grants.
Yes, Madam Chair, yes. On legacy grants, they are project. Dollars go into the projects, not to the administration or the overall structure of the organization.
I mean, maybe it would be more appropriate to have something in the appropriations section that says that administrative costs can't be taken from legacy funds. So I think Ms. James is working on some other idea. Ms. James.
Madam Chair and members, one idea would be on line 2.21 of the A8, after commission, insert a comma, but the commission shall not apply legacy grants towards salaries under this subdivision, period.
And that may be too broad because there may be a project director that's assigned to it. I think maybe it's difficult for us to write this right now. So do you want to, Senator Johnson, do you want to just remove the section so it's just like this needs work kind of message, or not remove the section and just tell them this needs, we are concerned about legacy funds being used for overhead. Like maybe all the participating communities should, you know, contribute to the overhead of the commission so that the legacy monies can be used purely for the legacy project.
Exactly.
You know, or.
And that's what we do.
Yeah, Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, and that, I think you said it very well. I'm certainly not opposed to any of the subject matter of this bill, but I think to make it clear that the money that it takes to fund administration should not come from the legacy fund.
So is your desire, Senator Johnson, to still have some language or to delete the subdivision, or just communicate to Senator Tom Sony our wishes informally?
Well,
what would you like to do?
Without an amendment, you mean?
It's up to you.
Senator Thomas Sony suggests.
Well, Senator Thomas Sony, what do you think?
Madam Chair, I understand the concern. I think DNR uses like 2.5% of the legacy money getting the grants out and for passing the grants. So it's not as if legacy money isn't used to for other things other than the trails themselves.
I think, Senator Tom Sony, I think the difference is that the DNR is a state agency. These people are making the comparison more to the Metropolitan Parks and Trails Commission. And that's what it's more comparable to, and that the Metropolitan Parks and Trails Commission does have another source of funding. It has property taxes that it's used, and it uses its property taxes to pay the administrative overhead so that all the legacy money can go to the project. So you could actually, if you did a similar kind of assessment to all the participating towns and counties, you would have more money than to devote to legacy projects in your regions without the 2.5% DNR being pulled off. You could look at it that way.
Well, Madam Chair, we'll figure this out. So whatever the committee wants to do here is going to be fine with me. If you want to leave it in or take it out, that's fine.
Enough discussion. Okay. What do you want to do?
I'll keep the motion on.
Keep the motion on. Then Senator Johnson moves on page 2 of the amendment, subdivision 8, line 220-221, to delete subdivision 8.
And Madam Chair, I'd like to just say that it's not meant to get rid of it, but rather to allow you time to come up with some other language.
That's more restrictive. Okay. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay?
Nay. Oh.
Motion prevails. Okay, then a motion to send this bill to finance. So Senator Scalzi. Senator Scalzi moves.
As amended.
That SNFL 1021 is amended, be recommended to pass, and sent to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
Nay.
No. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Senator Eaton, I'm going to do my bill.
I know.
I have my witness here. So it's... Senator Dietzick, is your bill quick? All right, Senator Dietzick. A little late then. You have two bills.
Both should be quick, or we'll do one and whatever.
I think Senator Sparks has been waiting too.
I know.
Senator Dietzick, Senate File 910?
Yes.
All right.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Committee. Before you, for your consideration, is Senate File 910. This bill allows the Secretary of State's office to accept funds for two different parts of the office, elections and the Safe at Home Address Confidentiality Program. I believe there is a you should have a delete all amendment possibly in your packet. The delete all amendment differs from the bill as introduced in response to concern the office heard in the House and with concerns I heard from conversations with individual senators. This amendment narrows the scope of the bill and specifies the circumstances under which the Secretary of State can accept funds, requires the funds to be deposited in a special revenue fund, and requires an annual report on any funds received. With me today is Beth Frazier, Secretary of State Office, Director of Government Affairs, to help explain the bill and answer any questions. And so I will turn it over to...
I don't have an amendment.
Senator Dietzick, we don't have a delete all for the 910, but we have one for Senate File 1111.
Well, I have a few copies here. This one was actually done a while ago.
Why don't we set that aside so we can get more copies made, unless you have enough for the committee?
No, I have like four.
Okay. So, all right, we'll set 910 aside, and why don't you do 1111, and we have that amendment.
Thank you.
Is that in here? Is it in our packet?
I don't see.
No, it's coming.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
All right. The other bill is Senate File 1111, and this bill amends a special law that currently applies to Minneapolis and the Minneapolis Public School District so that it will also apply to Hennepin County. It gives Hennepin County the authority to negotiate agreements with local labor organizations representing the trades relating to certain skilled trade and craft workers and apprentices. This bill is an agreement worked out between Minneapolis, Hennepin County, and the building trades. With me this afternoon is Mr. Bill Peters, Labor Relations Director for Hennepin County, and Dan McConnell, Business Manager for Minneapolis Building and Construction Trades Council. And I will ask them to say a few words and be available to answer any questions.
Mr. Peters?
Do you want to go
first? I'm sorry. Who's here? I didn't hear what you said.
Dan McConnell.
Mr. McConnell. Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Dan McConnell with the Minneapolis Building Trades. This bill extends the authority that was given to the city of Minneapolis back in 1988 to hire skilled trades workers from union hiring halls to work directly for the county. It's a good model. It's worked well for the city and the park board and as well as the Minneapolis School Board. And we would appreciate your support of this. It's not a mandatory bill or mandatory authority. It's a permissive authority. If local unions so chose and the county so chose to enter into these agreements, they would be allowed to do that. So, happy to answer any questions.
I don't get it.
I see it on the delete all.
That's what you do.
We have a delete all amendment.
It literally takes out two lines, and that's it.
The entire bill or the amendment, the change? Let's just do the delete all. We're only dealing with the delete all. Senator Dahl moves the delete all amendment to Senate File 1111. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Okay, so what does the delete all amendment do?
Just as I mentioned, Madam Chair, it just takes out some language that we didn't feel we needed in the bill that we agreed to remove with the county and myself. And like I said, this bill just gives permissive authority to the county to enter into agreements if they so choose with the affiliates of the Minneapolis Building Trades.
Why isn't it crossed off? Care what they're doing in the delete all amendment. I just want to know what they're doing in the bill. That's why I'm so confused. Sorry, we were talking about the difference between the bill and the amendment, and I said I don't care about the bill. I only care about the amendment. All right, any questions on the delete all amendment? Now the bill.
Madam Chair.
All right. Senator Hall.
On the amendment 2.5, can we explain what's happening that we're putting a 1996 date in there?
Mr. McConnell.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Hall, that just is the date that the the session law was last amended when that particular provision took effect, so we just need to update that as the bill changes it again, so that we put that update in there, and the new language that takes effects upon enactment.
Okay. Any other questions? Any motions?
I'll move.
Senator Johnson moves that Senate File 1111 as amended be recommended to pass and is going to the floor. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. All right. So we have the amendments for 910. Yet? Did the Xerox machine break down?
Do you have the amendments? That was the one that we actually weren't scrambling today on.
All right, Senate File 910. Why don't you go ahead and is this a delete all amendment?
Yes. And I had mentioned earlier, thank you, Madam Chair, and sorry for the confusion. As I said, this was the one delete all that we actually had done and we weren't scrambling with earlier this week. So this delete all actually differs from the bill based on concerns that we heard when the bill was first heard in the House.
Senator Dietzick,
yes.
We don't really care how it differs from the bill.
Okay.
We only want to know what it does because
Alrighty.
It's an author's amendment.
Yes.
It's a delete all.
So
depending. Okay. Senator Torres-Ray moves the amendment A13. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Now, just explain, the bill is amended by the delete all.
And I will ask Ms. Frazier from the Secretary of State's office to do that.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Beth Frazier with the Office of the Secretary of State. And this bill would allow the office to accept funds for two different parts of the office, for the Elections Division and for the Safe at Home Address Confidentiality Program. The Section 1 relates to the elections part of the office, and the amendment would allow the office to, number one, ask for and accept funds from local government officials, local election officials, for technological projects. This would be of help if there are certain functionality that local jurisdictions feel is important to have added to the state systems that is not in the state's budget or that is not a high priority for the state because it would only apply to one or a few jurisdictions. The second circumstance under which we could accept funds for elections provisions is it allows the Secretary to accept federal funds without going through the Legislative Advisory Committee process, but only if the acceptance of funds does not commit the state to a maintenance of effort. Going through this process, the Legislative Advisory process, is time-consuming and cumbersome and has resulted in delays in projects. For example, a federal grant for improvements for military and overseas voters would have been available to the state in December 2011, but the office did not receive legislative authorization until late March 2012, and that several-month delay allowed the office to provide the enhanced services for the general election but not the primary. So we want to avoid that process again, but only in cases where there aren't tails or a maintenance of effort. The Secretary must report annually on any funds raised under this section. Section 2 of the bill relates to the address confidentiality program called Safe at Home, and it gives the Secretary of State not the authority to solicit, but only to accept funds if they are offered from individuals. There have been times when participants in the program are so grateful for the benefits that the program provides because it allows them to establish a life without fear that they'll be found out where they live, that they want to make a small financial contribution to the program. And we've had to explain to them that they can make a contribution to the state, but the process involves filling out several forms and that it's unclear whether the contribution would actually go to the program or to the state's general fund. And in each case, they've decided not to contribute after all. It also gives the Secretary of State the authority to apply for grants from charitable foundations and for federal grants. And similar to the elections provision, the office would not need to go through the Legislative Advisory Committee to accept a federal grant as long as there is no maintenance of effort requirement. Again, the Secretary must report annually on any funds raised under this section, except that if program participants in the Safe at Home Address Confidentiality program do choose to make a contribution, we would not list their names separately because they fear for their safety, and instead would aggregate those contributions. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Senator Scalzi?
Thank you, Ms. Chair. So there is no way for Safe at Home donors to grant money, to give money to the state in any other fashion other than doing this?
Ms. Fraser.
Madam Chair and Senator Scalzi, we do not believe that we currently have the authority to apply for grants, federal grants, if they were available, or grants from charitable foundations. And it's not entirely clear to us what the process would be for somebody, if somebody wanted to write a $50 check mm-hmm. to the program, how that would work, or if it would go to the general fund or to the program.
Okay. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Fraser, the safe at home situation now, where does how can a person that has this or is in this situation, how do they make charitable or grants or I should say donations now? I mean, what's so different about their doing the process now than it would be by putting this in the statute?
Ms. Fraser.
Madam Chair and Senator Anderson, people in the program are primarily survivors of domestic violence, but also include people that are in the program who fear for professional reasons, so some prosecutors, people in the judiciary, law enforcement. And this would allow them, for example, if on a few occasions people have felt so grateful for the program services, because basically the law allows them to use a post office box address that we give them for all legal purposes and allows them to go about their life and get a driver's license and, you know, send their kids to school without anyone being able to track where they live because all the public records and all the private records say that they live in a post office box. And so only our staff actually knows their real address. And so some people have felt so grateful for the service that they've said, you know, I'd like to make a contribution to the program. So this would allow them to contribute to the program if they so chose, but does not allow us to solicit funds from them. You know, we're not looking for and would not ever want to ask them for funds. But if somebody offers funds because they're grateful, you know, we'd like to be able to say, well, you're welcome. And so that's that piece of the bill.
Senator Anderson.
Well, Madam Chair, Ms. Fraser, I'm working with a lady who's in a safe-at-home type situation right now, and the people that have been working with her have disclosed her whereabouts, unfortunately, and people that she's been trying to flee from have been actually tracking her. And my concern is that if we add more stuff, this is through county, a different county than that I live in right now, it was from Hennepin County, that she fled from to come to my county, and yet the person from the county in Hennepin revealed her whereabouts. And I'm just, I just get, it, more stuff we add to this situation is safe at home to allow any more people coming in involved with these individuals who want to be kept away from their whereabouts and their who they are. She's this person here, first time I've ever dealt with someone like this, but I'm just seeing this as another way of from what I gathered, I sat with her and talked with her for almost 2.5 hours, and to me her trust in public officials is very low, and I'm just, to me, just putting this back and allowing this to happen, she would not, from that, my standpoint, would not want to even see something like this. But that's just my story, and I'm letting you
stick
know.
Into it. To it.
Madam Chair, Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, but she does not have to do anything. This is just giving the Secretary of State's office the authority to actually, if someone offers to donate money, for them
understand.
To accept it. Where currently they can't, there's no path for them to accept the money.
Understand that. I just see it as another way of public officials getting involved with people's lives that they don't need to be involved with.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The other aspect, just so I'm clear of this, is that charitable organizations could give money to the, is it the Secretary of State's office, or who would that be to?
Ms. Fraser.
Madam Chair, Senator Hall, this gives the office the authority to apply for a grant from a charitable foundation if there was one that made sense for use by the Safe at Home Address Confidentiality Program.
Oh, Madam Chair. So it's just for that program.
Madam Chair, yes, Senator Hall. The second section of the bill amends Chapter 5B, which is exclusively about the Safe at Home Address Confidentiality Program.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hall.
And I don't know all this stuff, so the program is a state program?
Madam Chair, Senator Hall, yes, it is a state program.
And is it legal for a...
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For a charitable organization to give money to the state?
Ms. Fraser.
Madam Chair, Senator Hall, yes, it is. In fact, the Pew Charitable Trust, for example, several years ago gave our office several $100,000 that defrayed the costs of adding functionality that was passed by the legislature to automatically update voters' addresses as they move. And so offices such as ours can and do apply for and accept grants from charitable foundations from time to time.
Any other questions? Any motions? Senator Scalzi?
Go ahead.
Make the motion.
I would move Senate file 910 as amended to pass and be sent to the floor.
Actually, state and local, state departments.
Finance.
And Veterans Finance, yes.
Finance, okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Chair is in doubt. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
All those in favor, please raise your hand. And all those opposed? Okay. On a 6-4 vote, the motion does prevail. Those are
Thank
just
you.
Loud. Bill passes and is sent to the Finance Committee. Okay, members, what I want to do is I want to take Senator Sparks' two bills. I think they're quick, and then we'll take my bill, which is quick, and then we're going to take our dinner break, okay, which is just going to be a half an hour. Senator Sparks.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. I know that you've had a long hearing and will continue to. Hopefully these two bills will be rather easy. Which one would you like me to bring up first, Madam Chair?
Senator Sparks, 1119.
Okay.
That's fine.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 1119 deals with paid sick leave for service in the military. Current law provides public employees with 15 days of paid leave each year for military service. In addition, National Guard and service members are allowed unpaid leave for other time away from their job. The bill makes sure that these employees are able to use the 15 days of paid leave as desired, along with their unpaid leave. The bill came to me. I was contacted by a local police officer in my district, Madam Chair and members, who has over 14 years of service in the National Guard and Reserves. He is being required to use his paid military leave before any unpaid military leave. As a police officer, the problem that he faces is that he works overnights and weekends and often has to use his military leave for his weekend drills. He has a young family, and being forced to use all of his paid leave for the drill weekends creates a financial hardship for his family during the 2 weeks of service. 2 weeks of service each reservist and National Guard member must perform each year. The bill would allow service members like him to choose when it's best for them to take the paid time versus the non-paid time, Madam Chair, and that's the extent of the bill.
Are there any questions on the bill from members? All right. Any motions?
So moved.
All right, Senator Eaton moves Senate File 1119 be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor.
Oh, no, it has to go to Finance. I'm sorry.
It has to
Senator
go to Finance.
Senator Saxhaug has requested. I'm sorry, Madam.
Okay, great. That's fine. I will amend that motion. Any other discussion? All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. All right, Senate File 746.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 746 is a simple bill that raises the threshold for audits on pension funds for volunteer firefighters from $200,000 to $500,000. This would create a cost savings for small rural departments that are already dealing with tight budgets. I think in the essence of time, I will turn it over to Mr. Straczynski that can talk a little bit more about it. But basically what happens is these small departments receive very small amounts from the state, but currently a large portion of that is going towards these audits that they have to report on. And with that, I would turn over to Mr. Straczynski.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bill Straczynski, and I represent the Minnesota Fire Departments Association and fire chiefs, fire marshals, what have you. These are small funds that are being audited. Years ago, when they were created, audits used to cost by a bookkeeper $75, but now these audits are required, and sometimes they cost $5,000 or $7,500. And their aid that they get from the municipality on this, or the fire aid, might only be $10,000. So they're spending half the money on audits. If you would automatically have adjusted the inflationary factor when this law went into effect, the $200,000 threshold, just use it for inflation, it'd be $460,000, I believe, today's prices. So we think this is a reasonable approach. Would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Any questions?
Makes sense.
Okay, thank you. Motion.
So moved.
Senator Johnson moves that Senate File 746 be recommended to pass. Goes to the Senate floor. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Members.
Senator Eaton has promised me that this bill will not take a long time, and Senator Higgins wants to really talk to us. 468.
Now I got to find it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did it.
Like last week.
I know it does.
This was the bill we had before us before members, and I think there was some discomfort with it. I don't think I remember exactly, but we laid it over, and Senator Eaton asked us to bring it back. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is the Senate File 468, and it allows the Hennepin County Soil and Water Conservation District to be discontinued upon the approval of the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources. I will allow the experts here to explain that.
Madam Chair, I'm County Commissioner from Hennepin County, Linda Higgins.
Commissioner, former Senator Higgins, welcome back.
Thank you. It's important to notice that this bill does not automatically discontinue the conservation district. It allows Hennepin County to petition Bowser to make the determination to discontinue the Hennepin Conservation District and transfer the duties and authorities to the county. This is compromised language developed by Hennepin County and Bowser, and it applies only to Hennepin County through our own statute 383B. The Soil and Water Conservation District model works well in a lot of areas, but it doesn't necessarily work very well for Hennepin County districts, citizens, and our local governments. Hennepin County is a little bit unique. We have a quarter of the state's population, 45 cities, 11 watershed districts, 2 park districts, no townships, and the only unincorporated land we have is at Fort Snelling National Park. Citizen and local input is needed for needed conservation services comes from our cities and our watershed districts, as well as from the county board and the county staff. Since 2003, the Hennepin County Environmental Services Department began delivering the majority of the services ordinarily done by a conservation district. And the county staff has delivered the remaining statutory-based services since 2007 under an agreement with the Hennepin Conservation District. We think that this makes good sense. It helps streamline government. It helps streamline the delivery of conservation services. It reduces complexity. We think that hardly anybody in Hennepin County knows there's a Hennepin Conservation District. They know Hennepin County. They know the environmental services work that we do as a county, but the conservation district is not well known at all, and the work that they ordinarily would do if they were another county county's conservation district is actually being done by our county employees. And we think that this is a good way to ensure the mission and the goals of the conservation statute. It makes sure that they are met and that they provide for the work to be done in a good way on behalf of Mother Earth and our citizens.
And I think that Senator Hayden had some concerns about this, but I'm told that he's all right with this now.
We already did Sparks.
We have all talked with him, and I believe he had... We made a mistake in not talking to him beforehand, so if he had had any questions, he could have asked them. And
okay.
I assume he's presenting a bill somewhere else.
Yes, he is. Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair and Commissioner Higgins, the Anoka County people that I have spoken to from the Anoka County Soil and Water Conservation Districts are very much opposed to this bill because they look upon it as, you know, a statewide network, and the water doesn't end at the Hennepin County borders, and everyone needs to work together in this area. But I would be interested in what you, how you convinced Senator Hayden, because he was quite disturbed about it. Is he here?
Adamant. No.
Madam Chair.
Senator Eaton.
I discussed this with Senator Hayden, and he had heard from one individual from his district who was a constituent who had stated they didn't want this to happen, and that's all the information he had, so he was questioning that, and since he hadn't been spoken to beforehand, was unaware of the whole story. I think it's unique that Hennepin County is kind of a state unto itself. They have their own pollution control agency, and which is not the case in Anoka County. And I think that they can manage this quite well.
Madam Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Again, you know, I appreciate and I suspect Minneapolis, their pollution control agency, probably puts into effect some more stringent rules upon some of the entities that operate out of their district. But again, I go back to, I don't think Minneapolis or Hennepin County is an entity on its own with water. That is really unusual, I think, for me.
It's not like the services aren't going to be done. They're being done by the Conservation Department in Hennepin County.
Environmental Services. Yeah. So, Madam Chair, where conservation districts would work together, now the conservation districts in other counties would work with our staff in the Environmental Services Department.
Senator Scalzi?
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I was just going to say that we do have someone here in the audience from the State Organization of Soil and Water Conservation Districts if we want to get another opinion as far as...
We heard from someone statewide last time we had this bill in front of us, but we do have Eleanor Weserly from the Hennepin Conservation District that would like to testify. He sent a note. Ms. Weserly, please come forward.
You can sit.
Senator Scalzi.
Ms. Chair, I would request that we also have testimony from the State Organization of Soil and Water Conservation. I don't remember the testimony.
Oh, yeah. Okay. We did. Senator Hall.
If somebody's going to take a commissioner's spot, I'd like to ask her a question before she leaves the table.
No, I'll stay.
Okay. Ms. Weserly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, honorable members of this committee. I am recently elected to the Hennepin Conservation District Board. I am the District 1 supervisor. And the reason that I came to the board are actually many of the same reasons that Honorable Commissioner Higgins listed for the dissolution of the board. However, I take the very opposite tack in dealing with the issues that the district faces. The Soil and Water Conservation Districts were established in response to the Dust Bowl crisis of the 1930s, when private landowners did not have access to education resources to most properly manage their land.
Ms. Westerly, I don't think you were at our previous hearing, but we did hear the history of the Soil and Water Board Commission's
very
honorable history. So you don't have to tell us again.
And today, the conservation districts are poised to play a more important role than ever, given that last summer was the worst drought that Minnesota faced since the Dust Bowl. The purpose of the boards themselves are to serve as publicly elected officials that are directly accountable to the citizens only on natural resource issues. A special purpose board, again, directly accountable to its citizens and its constituents. We are able to speak about natural resources and environmental issues freely because we are only accountable to our constituents as opposed to another supervisor or a different statute that might govern us and things like that. And I believe that now is the best time for the board to be revisioning itself, which is exactly what we're doing. We are looking at public education and outreach. We are organizing town halls around the purpose of the board and how Hennepin County residents can and do benefit from the board. We have not had a chance, the new board hasn't had a chance to discuss the language of this bill with Hennepin County, nor have we had a chance to discuss the issues that Hennepin County supposedly has with us. Our $30,000 a year budget is really less than a drop in the bucket of Hennepin County Environmental Services, and we fully believe that we as a board, a five-member board, can deliver services ourselves in a volunteer capacity as well as work with Hennepin County to deliver the technical services that need to happen under the Wetland Conservation Act. So I am here to testify very much in opposition of the bill. You have my personal promise that we are working on revisioning and moving forward with the board to best serve Hennepin County residents, as well as best serve the interests of the state in the network of soil and water conservation districts.
Thank you. Would you repeat your name for the record, please?
Sure. My name is Eleanor Westerly. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Westerly. We appreciate you coming today. Is there someone from the statewide Bowser board here? Ms. Westerly, maybe you could let her join us. We did hear from someone, like I said, on the whole history of Bowser, so please make your comments brief.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Sheila Vanney. I'm the Assistant Director for the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. I won't recap all of our testimony from the previous hearing, but would just like to point out that specific to this legislation, we believe that the question before the Board of Water and Soil Resources when they make the decision as to whether to discontinue the SWCD and transfer their authorities should not be whether the county can perform those authorities and duties, but whether the existing conservation district cannot. That should be the threshold question before the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And as I've stated before, we do have a lot of discomfort with the specific language in this bill that allows the County Board of Commissioners to delegate their responsibilities as an elected board to the Hennepin County Environmental Services Department.
Thank you. Did you have a question, Senator Hall? All right, anyone have a question for Ms. Fanny? All right, thank you very much. Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I just assumed you've read the bill and wondered if you had seen any punctuation errors.
Madam Chair, Senator.
Or grammatical errors.
I'm really never going to live that down, am I?
You really aren't.
Okay. Any other questions? Then Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, to Ms. Senator Eaton. My county commissioners and the Soil and Water Conservation Service have great concern for this bill and asked me not to support it. So I'm just letting you know that the water that's underneath Minneapolis doesn't stop there. It goes into Wright County, goes into Anoka County, and they're concerned about the way this bill is written, that it's going to have an effect on their ability to continue on in the same vein that they're doing right now.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Higgins.
Madam Chair, just to reiterate, County Environmental Services, our staff have been doing the majority of the work that a conservation district does since 2003. And so unless your county has had issues with the water coming from us since 2003, I don't expect that there would be much of a change in working together or, the quality of the care that we take for the water and conservation efforts in Hennepin County. Hennepin County staff have been doing this work since 2003.
Madam Chair.
Sarah Anderson.
Commissioner Higgins, I think that up until 2003, the Soil and Water Conservation Board in Hennepin County had, my understanding, good working relationship. They were doing the job that they were supposed to, and then all of a sudden the staff took over doing what supposedly the Soil and Water Conservation Service should be doing. And I think with the new board coming on board, they see what's happened and want to go back to what they had before. So my concern is that the process in which this is being done, allowing one elected body to circumvent another elected body.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Higgins, we are not circumventing another. We're petitioning Bowser, who will make the decision on whether we can actually do this. We can't go around. We can't eliminate another elected board. We're going to ask, we're going to petition Bowser, and that's what this bill is. You can see it laid out, and probably the clearest way is on the summary to see the process that we would go through.
All right. Senator Eaton moves that Senate File 468 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Senate floor. Sir, did you want to address the committee on this bill? I'm sorry we didn't have your name. Why don't you come up to the table? Mm-hmm. Can you just introduce yourself for the tape, please?
Yes, I apologize. Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Chris Lord. I'm the district manager from the Anoka County Soil and Water Conservation District, sister agency to the Hennepin Conservation District. I heard you list a couple bills, not including this one, before lunch and then a recess, so I grabbed a candy bar, so I apologize if you did call my name.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, we changed it, yeah.
Okay. One thing that's mentioned here, the language, it says that, and it was just restated, that this is just a bill to have the authority to petition Bowser. The language says that it's provided progress toward the goals identified in the Soil and Water Law can be accomplished without the Hennepin Conservation District, Bowser shall approve it. And this is just to make the point, one Boy Scout puts up one wood duck house. Progress toward wildlife has been made. Tax-based protection is actually one of the goals. Hennepin County, I'm sure, does a lot to protect tax base. Therefore, progress has been made. So the threshold really, I don't think it allows Bowser to say no. I don't know how they could possibly say no with the current language, and that really concerns me. So the precedent that gets set, if there's tension between a district and a county board, is first we'll defund you, and then we'll go for legislation to get rid of you. I've heard the argument made, well, we shouldn't be afraid of change. We're evolving, and government should evolve and be responsive, and I absolutely agree with that. Watershed districts are brought up a lot. There are 11 watershed entities in Hennepin County. There are a bunch all over the metro. But watershed districts only cover 30% of the state. So they're not a statewide solution.
That's true.
So if we're going to evolve something, let's think big picture. And let's come up with something and evolve something. Let's do statewide watersheds. Great. Let's give them the power they need to be efficient and effective. Or let's look at soil and water districts and give them the power to be efficient and effective. The reason watersheds were formed, because soil and water districts, frankly, didn't raise their hands in 1953 and said, we can do that. It's unfortunate. So now we have this awkward complexity. I would love to see in the state, and the legislative auditor, frankly, had a report, I think it was 2008, 2009, that commented on these layers and said, fix it. This really isn't a fix. My concern is that it's dismantling and leaving a donut hole in one area of the state that wouldn't allow us have one single statewide coverage border to border. Every acre, every citizen in the state is covered by soil and water conservation districts right now, and that wouldn't exist. And this board, even though they're deferring on all their per diems, they're not taking any money, believes it can make a difference, and they cost Hennepin County nothing. So what is gained? You're losing an interested citizen board who's committed to natural resources and, frankly, has started to spearhead the development of a coalition to galvanize those soil water districts for recharge areas for sustainable groundwater in the metro. It's a big issue. No one else is doing it, but it's coming out of this Hennepin Conservation District Board because they've identified a need, and they said, well, maybe we don't have a lot of staff, but we can organize, we can motivate, and we can galvanize. Let's get a group together. So good will be done by this organization, and if they're allowed to exist, I think they'll prove that.
Well, I'd hope that some of these issues would be addressed with when we laid the bill over before. So I appreciate. Would you say your name again?
Chris Lord, L-O-R-D.
L-O-R-D. Mr. Lord, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
All right, Senator Eaton.
Madam Chair, I would just like to emphasize that there will not be a donut hole. These duties are being done, and they're being done correctly and by essentially the same people who would have done them under the Soil and Water Conservation District. They're just being done under the umbrella of the county right now. And I'm certain that the county would be more than happy to have these volunteers help with develop these projects.
Senator Eaton moves that Senate File 468 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, members.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Eaton, if you want to come up here and chair. It's truly our last bill, and then we are going to take a break. So, Senator Sendrum, you can join us in my office if you'd like during our break. Madam Chair, in the interest of time and hungry people, we're going to be pretty brief. Senate File 457, the situation is with our public safety groups, especially fire and police, is many of them also belong to the National Guard and other reserve services and are called up for duty. And when they're called up for duty, the local community, the local city or county, then has to cover the cost of replacing them, usually with overtime. And so what this bill is doing is asking the legislature to set up a grant program, to reimburse local communities for those costs. And I have with me two witnesses, and I'd like them to talk a little bit about kind of the hardships that are created. We want to support our military, and we want to support our brave men and women who go off to protect our country, but it does create some problems in the home communities.
Thank you, Senator. Chris Parsons?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Chris Parsons. I'm a captain with the St. Paul Fire Department, 12-year member. I'm also secretary of St. Paul Firefighters Local 21. I represent 400 firefighters in the city of St. Paul. What this bill does is it's pro-military, it's pro-public safety, and it's also pro-local taxpayer. All we're simply asking is that the state fund a mandate that was set in motion 92 years ago. 1921, the state saw fit, and rightfully so, to see that no members of the military lose pay when on authorized military leave. Later, that was amended to limited to 15 days. That's even with that 15 days, it's still a huge burden on our fire departments and our taxpayers. In 1981, the Minnesota Veterans Preference Act was enacted to give veterans preference in hiring for local governments, and we have a disproportionate number of veterans that are in the police and fire services. In St. Paul, we have about 30 active National Guard and military reservists. And they do their training on the weekends and 2 weeks a year. And when they're gone, either the city has to not replace them and run fire companies short, or replace them usually with overtime, because our staffing margins are pretty razor thin given the cuts to local government aid over the last 10 years. What this bill is it's not a handout. It's not a form of local government aid. It's simply a payment for services rendered.
Thank you.
And I'll conclude. And I urge the committee to support this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Roy Makoso.
No. Members of the committee, Madam Chair, my name is Matthew Halady, St. Paul firefighter for the past 5 years. Prior to being hired by the St. Paul Fire Department, I served 4 years in active duty for the United States Marine Corps and was honorably discharged as a sergeant. I used that veteran's preference to get hired by the St. Paul Fire Department. It is part of the reason I got hired, and I see it as National Guard members and reservists being deployed more during the past 10 years that it hurts our department and other departments and police departments around the state. And I'm here to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions by the committee?
Madam Chair.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Pappas, this is for the whole state? First off?
Madam Chair, Senator Hall, yes, it would be for the whole state.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Hall.
And Senator Pappas, so we're covering the expense of their salaries while they're gone. Is that what it does?
Senator Pappas?
Madam Chair, Senator Hall, it would be up to 15 days, and the local community would submit a request. I mean, obviously, the rules would be written by the Department of Veterans Affairs, and they would submit the request, and then if there wasn't enough money, we would appropriate whatever we could from Senator Saxhog's committee, if he would. And then if there were more requests than there was money, they would be prorated.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hall.
And just so I'm sure, does it cover anyone that works for the government or just public safety units?
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, Senator Hall, just public safety.
Are there any further questions?
Then, Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 457 be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Finance.